Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
It's weird. I'm in a weird position now, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone tells me that I'm in a great position to work somewhere else. But what is that? I don't know.
Bunch of journalists lost their jobs last week at both of Canada's national newspapers. Just keeps happening. At the Globe and Mail, 18 positions are being eliminated. We don't know exactly who these people are yet. Buyouts are being offered. At the National Post, 6 editorial positions were eliminated. One of them belonged to the National Post's social media editor, Jeremy Barker. He got the axe last week, and I'm going to talk to him about it in a minute. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They are not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. More and more of us work for ourselves. If you are a member of this growing sector of the self-employed, freelancers, contractors, small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs, use FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com is the sponsor of this show. They make the world's best cloud accounting software. This is how you bill your clients. It's what I use. It's made my life easier. Check it out. FreshBooks.com. I'm sorry you got laid off, man.
It happens. Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time. I mean, it's like I work in media, so everyone has their stories. It seems everyone's, you know, been laid off somewhere. Some media company goes, and then you go back to them. You know, it's like we're gluttons for punishment, right?
Yeah.
We always think, no, this will be the one that'll work, and this will be the one where I'll stay. And, I mean, this is my second time from Post Media. I was at Dose for half of its run.
Yeah.
I was there for the full purge. It was my connections to them that got me back at the Post again, you know, a year later.
Yeah. It's a small industry. I've been hired and laid off from the same place twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's not even a stigma to it. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, you got laid off, find another job. So, I mean, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
But I'm not shocked. I'm not despondent.
It still sucks.
It absolutely does.
Like I just remember it as like one of the shittiest feelings. Like it's up there with breakups, and you know, you're just sort of left. You know, from my experience, questioning everything because you know you get a line, and of course they're like, it's not like you need convincing that this is a bloodbath of a shitty time, and people, wonderful people who do wonderful work, are getting laid off left, right, and center. But I was always like, well. Was that a line I was being fed? I mean, they could have laid off any number of people, but why did I get it? Did I do something? And it's anyhow. I don't mean to.
No. I mean, it's the moment. This is This is the thing. And I think it was the position that I was in that probably got the reaction that it did. You know, I got a nice outpouring of support on Twitter, and
you got an avalanche of support.
I absolutely did.
It took me a long time, and just trying to figure out who you are and what you're all about. I'm like, oh, can we just get through the thank yous?
I wanted to go back to. I know. I felt, you know, it's like being a guy who's being a social media editor. I figure if there was ever a time that you make sure you respond to every single person, this is the one.
I think you were savvy though, because whenever word of layoffs arises, I think the first reaction people have is, oh, shit. And then the next reaction is, who got it?
Yeah.
And because I think some people do feel stigmatized by it, they lay low.
Mm-hmm.
And you put up your hand.
Yeah.
And you said,
no,
you
know, I thought, I'm going to own it.
Yeah.
You want to hear about it? You might as well hear it right from me. You know, I'm happy to come here and talk to you today. On that day, I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I'm going to tweet. And if you want to use that, and this started, you know, go ahead. But that's what I have to say, and I'm not ready to sort of talk more about it. And I actually didn't have a phone at that time because I had to leave my phone on my desk. It was like, leave your laptop, leave your phone, walk away. Right?
It was one of those, like, you get the word and you just got to go.
I was gone.
That is so brutal. And a lawyer once explained to me why human resource departments enforce that policy. But it just seems like you work at a place for years, you get to know everybody, you got all your stuff there. And you just get the surprising notice that you're gone. Leave all your stuff.
Yeah.
Get up. Out the door.
They at least let me like go and pick it up myself. And,
yeah.
But they gave me the option. They said, if you don't want to go and do that.
Were you allowed back online in there?
No.
I mean, that's the main thing is they don't want you.
I was like, they shut it off.
They don't want angry people stealing company secrets or deleting Twitter accounts.
Or having the keys to every single social media account that the Post had, which I did.
Yeah.
I was the guy who knew all these things. So, you know, they were able to sign me out of some things, but I'm still friends with people. So, you know, later that night, I got some messages saying, could you pass along the passwords for, you know, a few of these other sites? Like, I had to sign myself out of them. I had to remove myself as admin afterwards.
I mean,
I'm not a bitter, angry person, and you know, doing something stupid right then would be foolish on my part.
No, but as a matter of policy, they treat everybody as if they're a bitter, angry, stupid person, which is really, like, shitty.
Yeah, like it could have transitioned easier.
Yeah.
I could have been like, look, someone's got, like, I can't just sign out of this account. If I do, it will shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone needs to take on ownership of this, and I have to log someone else in. I still have the granting privileges.
Right, right. Yeah. Having treated you like, you know, possibly like a toxic, the then yeah. they have to be like, hey, just wondering if you can help us out with something else. You know? Yeah. You should invoice them.
Yeah, that's right. That took me some time, you know.
Your position was social media editor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about that position. This is one of those things you hear the phrase a lot like, oh, so many people work in jobs that didn't exist 10 years ago. And this is a job that didn't exist 10 years ago and might not exist 10 years from now.
Yeah, it is quite possible. I mean, the interesting thing was, you know, I was one of the homepage editors. I got there, it's been 7 years. And so social media really sort of built up for media during that time. Like, we were signing up for our Twitter accounts on our own. Like, what's this Twitter thing? Should mm-hmm. we have a Twitter account? Yeah, we should get that. And it's like, oh, do you think that'll work for the Post? Should we get a Post Twitter account? Yeah, you know, which we did. And should we have the Post signed up to Facebook? It's like, I don't know. That's weird. Isn't that a personal thing? Why would media want to be on Facebook?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, why don't we get one anyways? And we'll try it out and we'll see how it works. And of course, they've both been wildly successful. And as that built, it was everyone's job. So we were doing that. And I just took more of an interest to the point where I said, you know, I'd like to just focus on this.
Oh, so you suggested the position itself to them?
Yes.
But this is a job that exists in many, many, many news organizations mm-hmm. now.
Well, there's always been sort of an argument that, like, well, isn't social media everybody's job? And to a level, it is. I mean, certainly, like, if you're a reporter, you should be on your own Twitter account and focusing on that. But when you're the producers of the site, there is enough social media that there was enough work to yeah. have someone who would spend their whole time on it. Now, they'll just have to spread that out, you know, and it'll be everyone who remains doing a little bit more.
Because they eliminated the position itself.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah. This was hotly debated online through, you know, in a few different forums recently with people saying, oh, you know, social media editor, that's dead. But if you're BuzzFeed and your employees are all 25 digital natives who are all incredibly interested in having as big a Twitter following as possible and incredibly mm-hmm. interested in having as many views of their pieces as possible, you know, maybe it's true that that is a distributed task and you don't need a dedicated worker for that. But if you're talking about the National Post, my guess is there are still amongst a lot of crusty older journalists in Canada this stubborn refusal to use this stuff, even though these are the prime drivers of traffic, and I think it's indisputed at this point that if there's a future for Canadian newspapers,
yeah.
it's online. Mm-hmm. So having somebody just to shepherd some of the old folk and make sure that it's just understood that that's part of the job is that everybody has to engage, that is not something you can just take for granted, I would imagine, yet.
Yeah, the pickup has been very good in the newsroom. There were holdouts. There were people who have come on in the past year or so and done really well, and I thought they would. But there are still some holdouts, and I don't think there's ever going to be 100% take-up on there. Christy Blatchford's never going to go on Twitter, or at least not, you know, in a public-facing way. She's just not. It's not going to happen. Maybe it doesn't matter if she's on. You yeah. know? I don't know.
It's she like, knows what's waiting for her.
But, I mean, I've seen her argue. Right? Like, it's not like she's some, you know, wilting flower.
It's true. She likes to scrap.
Yeah. You know, I think of another person who, and you know, enrages people online is Barbara Kay. And she got a Twitter account.
Yeah.
And she fights back. Yeah, it's like, I know she pisses like people off like crazy. But she would be like, here I am. Say it to me. I'll respond back to you. So, you know, I don't think there's necessarily that fear of the technology. I mean, a lot of people have come on, like, you know, and I'm picking the real, like, sort of more hot button-y kind of names, but like Terry Corcoran.
Mm-hmm.
He's really active on Twitter, you know, and he will argue with you and he will fight back too. And and oddly enough, he'll tell you about how much he likes Katy Perry.
Yeah.
How else would we have ever known?
Would we have known about Terrence Corcoran's crush on Katy Perry?
So a lot of the newsrooms come on, but, you know, there was always some, I think that's individual responsibility. I think when you're talking about the main accounts, though, as well, like how do you get things out onto the National Post account or the Financial Post account? You know, who's programming it onto Facebook, onto Tumblr, onto Pinterest, onto Foursquare, onto YouTube to reach an audience that isn't necessarily coming to your site?
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think, you know, if cuts are coming down to the point where they're having to choose, and I think I look at it as like I wasn't directly creating new content. I was amplifying content that was being created at the Post. And if you have to decide to cut the amplifier or the voice that you're amplifying, then I guess maybe I'm, you know, my kind of position is a more logical choice. So maybe they, you know, but they're getting so close to the bone now that you're starting to make choices like that.
Well, I think it's very generous of you to argue that there might have been a case for getting rid of you. I'm going to argue that that's ludicrous. I mean, you probably live in stats and can tell me a lot more about the stats than I could say offhand. But I have to imagine that a very significant amount of total traffic is generated through social.
There's a good amount. I would say you could have, I mean, it varies, right? But you could have up to 20% coming in from social.
Okay, so let's think about that. So 20% of the traffic comes from social and 80% from everything else. And then you've got the print edition. And so to get eyeballs on the print edition, you know, let's just talk about that. There's a marketing budget to get eyeballs and to get people subscribing. And you have a subscription product that you're offering online as well. I don't know how many people and how many ad dollars are dedicated towards promoting the content that exists in the print edition, let alone the physical costs of distribution and the paper and the boxes and everything that has to do with that entire process. But I think we're probably talking about millions of dollars. It is understood that, you know, you've got your content and that's great, and then getting it an audience is another job and requires resources. To have one position dedicated towards the social media side of that when it represents 20% of the traffic, and then to eliminate that role seems to me to be madness. Whatever hope for a future that the newspaper has, it's a head scratcher to turf a job like that. And then, well, then what do you want to be in 5 years? What do you want to, like, how is it going to happen? How are you going to survive?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I also look, you know, it's like I can make that argument, but then I also know that we had two people from our photo department go and someone from the comment section and
a long-time
sports editor, right? Like, so it wasn't like they went, you know what, we don't need this job. They went, we don't need or don't need, we can't afford. I don't know what the decision was. No one ever tells you, right? But it wasn't focused on my position. I was one of several people who left on Monday.
Yeah, it's a false conversation if we're saying, well, they could have taken from actual content generators as opposed to content amplifiers. They cut both.
Yeah.
You know, which makes me question what the strategy for survival is here. Like if you're a burger shop and you're struggling, would the answer be to make the burgers much smaller, charge the same for them, and stop advertising them?
Yeah, I don't know if they've got some old balance sitting there and they just keep taking pieces off and hoping it'll balance up against whatever giant debt load there is, and maybe this will all of a sudden work out. And I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. You know, they don't know. I mean, it's like, as I say, it didn't shock me. It's not like I don't know what the industry's going through, but
you can get rid of a social media editor and leave it to every content producer there to
sure. And I'm still seeing, you know, those things are still being updated. You know, it's still happening.
Yeah, you can get you can distribute all those tasks, and you can make each person responsible for their own content, and you can remove photographers and put in stock photography, and you can play this game of what is the lowest sum and the fewest number of hands that can put out a paper every day. Mm-hmm. But that seems like a race to the bottom.
That I can't disagree.
If you just agree. I mean, if people are showing less and less interest in your product and you're degrading the product, it's like a suicide mission.
I don't think anyone knows. I mean, they keep like, well, Maybe this is going to be the thing that gets us through here. And
with the paywall,
maybe paywall, right? We're all like swimming around in money like Scrooge McDuck.
All right, ours is not to wonder why. We don't know what the masters in these organizations think.
Yeah, I mean, if I knew how to save it, I would probably have mentioned it by now.
So. Can we play that game? I mean, not knowing what their strategy is and not knowing what their machinations are all about and what that balance is, let's pretend that the National Post is our struggling news organ and we see it as our responsibility to make sure that this thing exists. What would you do?
I'm at a loss. I mean, I got a tweet from a Humber journalism student saying, you know, oh, in light of your layoff and everything that's happening, you know, what advice would you give to us students who want to come into the industry? And it's like, good luck.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. And now I'm at this spot where I'm like, do I return to it? Do I try and find another kick at the can in newspapers, or do I go off somewhere else and turn my skills to brands and other people who want to use these tools to reach out to people? Because maybe that's just, you know, where we have to go. You know, now we're not the gatekeepers anymore. Because nobody requires that. I mean, that's where I think papers, that's where their money was. We were the only business in town. You know, we were the only game and everyone came to us and that's where all the advertising went, and therefore we were able to do what we do. But now you don't have to buy an ad with us. And so even if you don't want it in the newspaper, so say you want to put it on nationalpost.com or theglobeandmail.com, well, as an advertiser, why don't you go to BuzzFeed, or why don't you go to someone who aggregates ads and they go, oh, well, we want to sell to 30 to 35 year old women who are interested in gardening, and there's someone who is, you know, got their own site that they write up about that, and you can place an ad on them through somebody.
Or Facebook slices and dices based on interests, and rather than buying a page or some space on a site or a page of advertising in a newspaper, you're buying just like the eyeballs of a specific demographic distributed through thousands of websites.
Yeah, because I found one day I was following through some crazy post commenter who was like writing some obscure conspiracy theory on one of our Facebook pages. And I thought, well, I wonder what he's talking about. So I'm going to go find that out. That led me down some strange conspiracy site. And on their banner ad was an RBC ad.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, there's no way that anyone from RBC knows that they're on this site. They would have freaked out if they found out they're on this site. But the cookie followed me. And it went, oh, we want to advertise to Jeremy Barker.
This is what has driven online display advertising down, because rather than just competing, it's not about National Post versus BuzzFeed. It's about the National Post versus every participating website that just can throw up Google AdWords.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you're thinking about advertising and marketing?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
The dark side.
So I'm told. The dark side with money.
There's a future. The dark side has a future.
They appear to. So I don't know. It's interesting because on Monday I wasn't thinking about any sort of particular long-term future. And, you know, here I am today. And it's like, okay, I don't know. What else can I do?
I hear your dilemma is like maybe you can find another mainstream media job. But then it's just – is it just a countdown to this happening again?
Yeah. And I can't not think that.
Yeah.
You know, how do – you know, it's like, okay, well, we're interested in doing this right now, but will you survive?
I still don't understand why one of our papers doesn't just stop throwing good money after bad, get out of print entirely, and just become a digital-only publication. I mean, isn't that the only hope for reform?
I think you could. I mean, I think you could. And I've always thought – I mean, it's like we've got four dailies in the city. And I thought – like, I don't know if the Sun would ever do that. I'm almost surprised they didn't just, you know, why did they make 24? Why didn't they just make the Sun free?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you're the commuter daily, so own that. You know, that's your thing. People still, you know.
That's one of the last places for print.
Still
want to
hold the paper, right? Yeah. You know, you get on the subway and the streetcar and people are still holding the paper.
Until we get wireless underground.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like St. George and Bloor ain't going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So
subways are for print what cars are for radio. Yeah,
we're going to get more subways, right?
Yeah.
That's all we hear. More subways are coming. It must be true.
Wow, if Rob Ford saved print.
That's right. Rob Ford is going to save print.
Yeah.
See, whereas, you know, the Globe's never going to go digital only. I mean, they've got such, you know, when you're talking about your legacy and, you know, and putting, you know, dates in of from like 18 something, you know, it's like they've got too much history. I don't think they could go that way, and that's maybe not the audience they're chasing. The Star, I think, has got that same history, right? They want, there's a legacy behind them of who they are and how they got established. Whereas I thought, like, the Post was the one place that had that chance because it's 13 years old. It has never felt bound by any, like, well, that's not the way the Post does it. I mean, my time there was like, the way the Post does it is whatever way works, right?
Yeah.
And
it's young, it's scrappy. It's got a lot of young people who know this stuff there.
Yeah. I thought that could be the place. I thought that maybe that was eventually where it was going to go.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to stay there because you knew what the industry was like, but it was kind of fun to ride it out, you know, let's see how it goes, you know, and my foolish thinking, well, I'm doing social media for the digital side of the National Post. This is like, if I've got a chair on the Titanic, it's really high up there.
That's right, yeah. I mean, if you got to work in a newspaper, working in social media and digital seems like a safe place, but
sure
let's talk about that though. Do you think that you were in a digital ghetto? Because I have noticed this trend in organization after organization where digital can seem like such a wonderful place to be. A, it's one of the only places where younger people can get a leg up, and you can get a foot in the door, and you can move up quicker because it's not totally dominated by people who have been there forever and refuse to leave. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the stuff. These are new sections, new departments, new jobs, and so A, you can get in there, and B, everybody knows that this is where things are going. And yet, I have yet to see a Canadian news organization that treats digital like it's the future. It always feels like the ugly bastard stepchild where it's almost like, well, we have a digital department because what are you going to do? Not have a digital department? You know, we're going to have a website because what are you going to do? Not have a website? But it's never digital first, and it's the first to go.
I think it probably started that way there. When I first began, it did feel like, you know, yeah, that's digital. That's over there. But it changed. I don't think it's an aside now. Like, I think, you know, somebody figured out.
It's
like the head of digital for us reports to the EIC. He's not, you know, down below. You know, it's you're right up there in the chain. But, you know, ultimately, you're right. The whole structure is still built around producing a newspaper that gets published, you know, at the end of the day and sent out and distributed the next day.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a coincidence that the Globe cuts and the Post cuts were announced like within the same hour?
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be some weird kind of collusion. It really hit home with me. My wife works at the Globe.
Oh, okay.
So I showed up home early.
Uh-huh.
I was like, what are you doing home? It's like, I'm done work. It's like, oh, what do you mean by that? It's like, it means exactly what you think.
Right.
Okay, so we start talking for a few minutes. She says, I have to get on. She was working from home that day. And I said, I have to get on a conference call. It's like,
The town
not both of us, not the same day.
Okay. She was on the town hall meeting conference call.
Yeah.
And she's okay?
Yeah, she's okay. You're like, man, what are we both doing working in media?
Yeah.
Rolling the dice.
But so many of us do that.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Right? Because they're kindred spirits.
Yeah. There's just so much uncertainty as to what's next, you know, on a personal level. I'm feeling that too. And on an industry level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope it survives. It was a fun place to work at. I liked it.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily subscribed to the voice of the Post, but I understand that that voice has a right to exist as much as any other, right?
Okay. How many Posties are not conservative? I get the feeling this is a whole newspaper run by people who don't agree with the politics of the newspaper itself.
There's a lot of people at the Post who live in Riverdale. Uh-huh. I think the heart of that sort of conservative side of paper, you know, what's left of Conrad's legacy, you know, resides in the comment section.
Yeah.
My feeling is we're now it'll take a while to stop saying that, that they are more of a libertarian paper now than a conservative paper, you know, more personal rights and freedoms than just hard, hard right, you know, philosophy.
Or partisan conservative.
Yeah. And so it's always funny when I would say read an Andrew Coyne column and he would be called both, you know, Trudeau, you know, lapdog or, you know, next in line for a Senate seat from Stephen Harper over the same piece.
Yeah. But in reality, Coyne has been incredibly critical and than most when it comes to Harper and especially when it comes to scandals and the tight leash on information. John Kay seems to lean very hard, like personal liberty kind of libertarian
and
side.
I think the case is like right now, that's who's in power. That's who the government is. And if there's scandals to that, they, you know, no one's turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah.
They will say it's like, this is what they're doing wrong. I mean, if anything, Andrew says it's like they're not conservative anymore.
Yeah. If you had to put your finger on what the establishment newspaper is in Canada and what the voice box of conservatism in terms of conserving the way things are, it's firmly the Globe and Mail.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the migration of journalists to marketing and PR is already well established, and that's where a lot of people are jumping. I wonder about it. This is it's a topic for another episode, but I wonder if, you know, all these brands that are making their own content and feel like they can just completely sidestep all the papers, mm-hmm. I wonder if they're not banking on a gimmick. It works for a little while, but can you?
The Fords believe it to be true, right? You give them the microphone, and they're talking. They're talking over you.
The Fords are some of the most famous people in the world at this particular moment. If you're, you know, a brand of chewing gum, all these brands that are hiring up all these journalists are going to need to piggyback something that sustainably gets people's attention. Mm-hmm. That might not be a newspaper anymore, but it's going to be something, and it's not going to be them. Like McDonald's.com or whatever is not going to have a daily sustained audience.
But they seem – I mean, I think that's – they're going to try that.
Yeah.
I think that's what's coming around right now.
Everyone's going to try to do the Old Spice campaign, and everyone's going to try to have wonderful killer content, and everyone's going to succeed once a year. And while this gimmick runs its course, the news is getting gutted.
Yeah. As far, you know, as I can see historically, there was lots of advertising money, and that paid for the journalism, you know,
yeah.
not in a hey, we're going to pay for this journalism, but
no.
Like it afforded the journalism to exist. No
yeah.
one has ever had to pay for it.
It's the car ads in the wheel section that pays for the correspondent in Egypt. And,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
And now you're like, okay, here you go, everybody. You want this news. We all say we want the news. Sure. Of course we want the news. So how much are you willing to pay for it? And you're like, oh, whoa.
Look, I'm with you. I think that this is content of value. If you can convince every single reporter in the world to not give out their stuff for free, then let's put up paywalls and let people decide who they want to pay for their news. But as long as there's one source out there giving it away.
Yeah, paywalls will really only truly work if you're a monopoly or you're somewhere like – or you're so unique that you're like – okay, I will pay for that.
Trade news does well with that, you know?
Sure. And people, you know, it's like I'm so tired of seeing people point, you know, it's like, oh, well, look at what the New York Times can do. And it's like, why don't you do that too? It's like, come on. Like, that's like not an accurate,
comparable
description.
But that is the gamble that every single one of these newspapers is making that's put up a paywall. Like, if the New York Times, if that was their salvation, which it might not be, then maybe it'll work for us too. But like, they're kidding themselves. I mean, that's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
The Toronto Sun is not the New York Times.
No. That was last year's thing, right?
Yeah.
Let's try that. And I mean, they're keeping them. They don't seem to be tearing them down at the moment, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, if you strip a building for its copper wire, it does make money, you know? Look, you've been hearing it a lot, but you're going to hear it one more time. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. That's the show. I hope it didn't bum you out too much. You can email me at jesse@jessebrown.ca. I'm on Twitter at Jesse Brown. The show has a website. It's at canadalandshow.com. I make this show with help from Tanara Yelland, and there will be another episode up on Monday. If you like Canada Land, tell a friend.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures. And it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.